If we don't have that continuous improvement, then why are we here, really? If you don't have resilience, you can't bounce back. And if you can't bounce back, you can't get stronger. So no matter what you get knocked down with, you always get back up.
Welcome to KPI Fireside. Our mission is simple: to improve companies and to improve careers through continuous improvement. In every episode, we explore the spark, the moment, the mindset, or the method that ignites real change. Whether you're just starting out or leveling up, you'll find the insights and inspiration to fuel your next improvement. Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. I am your host, Keith Norris. Our guest today is Janine Leigh Barrett. Janine is an accomplished infrastructure and governance executive with over 25 years experience across mining, engineering, and local government. Her leadership journey includes some very unique experiences, including 5 years in Antarctica, managing engineering operations in the most extreme conditions. And that experience has shaped her philosophy on building resilient teams that perform, adapt, and deliver. Janine, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Keith. Very good to be here.
Yeah, and where are you located geographically?
I'm in Cobar in Western New South Wales. And at the moment, it's 34.6 degrees Celsius, which is about 74 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a lovely, lovely clear day.
Nice. Yeah, I'm here in Utah, and we are heading into winter at the moment. So we're, it's getting a little chilly here.
No, we're coming out into summer.
So Janine, you've got a super interesting journey and experiences. And one of the things that we like to start this podcast off, we like to call this the spark. For a lot of folks that have spent their time in this operational excellence, continuous improvement, lean, however you refer to it, discipline, I find that a lot of folks have a unique story how they got interested in this work. I'm curious for you, what was the spark, if you remember specifically, like what is it that drew you to this type of work?
Mainly because I wanted to do something different. I became an electrician when there weren't many females in that field, way back in the end of the 70s, early 80s. So from there, once you're in that sort of industrial field, you have to improve. You can't stay stagnant. I did more studies. I did working in remote areas and mining, a lot of mining, and eventually Antarctica.
Antarctica. Tell us, what was it that took you to Antarctica? I don't meet a lot of people who have ever been to Antarctica, so I'm curious what's it like?
Nice and cold. The first summer I come back out of Antarctica, because I used to go down for summer seasons. First time I come back out of Antarctica and worked in the middle of, was out here in Cobar, and what I had at minuses for summer the previous year, I had pluses in this year, so it was a complete reversal, and that was pretty hard to take. But you get used to things.
Yeah, I know it gets quite hot in Western Australia. It was awfully hot.
Yeah.
What time were you in Antarctica year round, or wintertime, summertime? When was it?
It was only summer season, so I used to go down around October and back around February, March.
Okay, that's interesting. And what kind of work were you doing down there?
I was the engineering services supervisor. I was the first female to get that role. First full amputee to be on the ice. There was a gentleman that had a half a foot before me. I ran all the trade crews. So it was all the maintenance, and a lot of maintenance was done over summer instead of winter. All the emergency power was all done up then. The work on the gen sets was done. Any building works were all done. The blasting, so we could do building work. So they had a little quarry down there, and I used to blow things up. So all the good things were happening in summer.
You ran right past that amputee part too. I'm sure, you know, it's old news for you, but kind of an interesting fact. Tell us about that.
Yeah, after I finished my trade and I went to Queensland to visit my parents, I was running a bar. So, you know, I couldn't get a job as an electrician up there at the time. It was up in Cairns. So I ran a bar at a local pub. public house, whatever you call them over there, a tavern. And I was on the way to work one day riding my motorbike and a truck hit me. And it come out of across the road, going in the road beside me when I was going past it. So I flipped over and tried to get around behind him and clipped the back of him and ploughed into a car in front of me because they were all lined up to turn, and flipped over the car and landed on the bitumen and then bounced into a ditch of water and split myself all open. So from my hip to my knee, it was all opened up and broke my thigh pretty badly. I didn't have my boots on because they were all in getting fixed. I had the zippers busted. So I only had normal shoes on, broke 10 toes. Broke my arm, smashed through the gear stick, went through my hand, and then they took me to hospital. And they, because my mum used to work at the hospital in the psych ward, and she came down into when they rang and said that I was there, she came down and they were taking me up in the lift, and the doctor said to my mother, "She's going to have to lose a leg," and I told him to go himself. And I kept my leg for 9 weeks before they chopped it off. It re-broke all the nerves and everything on the bone were scraped away and it broke again. Of course, it had disintegrated and the little piece of bone had flicked out through the side of me. So it was a bit of a mess. And they asked, did I want to chop it off or try and save it and use a bit of bone from the bottom of my leg and the top of my leg, but it would be a limping sort of, it would never grow back strong because all the muscle had been cut away because it was so badly infected. And I said, I'd chop the thing off. So they did. So I've been without it for over about 40 years.
Well, that's quite a long time, I guess, to adapt and deal with that. I'm curious at the time, though, it was probably a pretty traumatic thing to go through.
Was in hospital for 17 weeks. So you get used to it.
So, I mean, you know, the physical healing is one part of it, but what did, I'm sure it takes some, a mental challenge learning to live a different way and getting used to all that stuff. What was that part like?
I don't think it's only a limb in my head. It's only a limb. If I lost my head, it might've been different, but it was only a limb. I use my hands because I was a tradie. I can get around on crutches.
Yeah.
When I got out of hospital, I went and started rewiring trawlers, and not having a leg means I could get into the trawler and unwind and connect things up because I could climb into places other people couldn't. I could climb up onto the boat when it was on dry dock on a scaffold. It was just what you did. It wasn't seen as anything other than get on with it.
I think that's a notable and impressive mindset there to deal with something like that and just to be like, oh, you just get on with it. So that's a super impressive mindset. They say that.
I don't think it was that. I was in a lot of pain when I got it chopped off and get phantoms. My mum was a psychologist. She taught me how to control pain so I didn't get phantom so bad. So I'm fine on pain. I had one time I went out with a gentleman once I had my leg, a false leg. I went out one time and he met me when I had my false leg, and I met him afterwards without it and he freaked out, and that was it. I got drunk, got home. My brother took me home. Nobody said anything. I got over it. Never happened again. You can't handle it. It's your business, not mine.
You said that your mother taught you how to deal with the pain, like what that sounds interesting.
It's just in your head. It's just in your head. You just control pain with your head. Don't you do that?
I don't know that everybody knows that
lucky
little trick.
Mum taught me how to do it. I've got very high threshold of pain. Very high.
So is there like some self-talk that you go through to deal with that pain? Most of us, I think, like, you know, you're in pain and you're like, oh, I'm in pain. So how do you think your way through that?
It's not there. Pain's not there. It's not there. I mean, it catches you. Of course it does. If it's out of the blue and you don't know it's coming, yes, it's there. Of course it is. And then you just got to sort of control it with don't know how you do it. You just do it. When I'm really tired, I get phantoms real bad sometimes. And when I'm really tired, I can't control them and then I'm jerking everywhere. And then I get more tired. That's when it happens hard. And then I'll have a Panadol and then that's enough to catch my breath and then I'm fine. Constant pain, like it's I don't have chronic pain or anything like that. It's just phantoms. They're occasionally and that's it.
Got it. Well, that's super interesting. I suppose that's a discipline I ought to look into, how to control that pain sometimes. Does it work for like
through it?
Does it work for things like headaches and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't get headaches. I don't get, you know, the migraines that everybody talks about that are so bad. I get the pixelated haze, but I don't get the pain. When I was having my first child, I went to sleep. So, I mean, it's not, you can achieve things if you want to.
I love it. I love it. That's a good mantra there. Okay, so tell us a little bit about this the book that you've written. It's Impact.
Yeah, I've a co-writer. So there's quite a few of us in it. There's 44 of us in it. We all wrote against the title. So the title's Impact, and every letter means something different. And I've got five in there. So I got IPACT. So I'm in that. So that's rather interesting. I was approached because of what I did in life, what I have done in life. And it's just about what impact you make on the world in different ways. It's out now, of course, but there's a lot of people in it that are entrepreneurs, and I'm the only minor in it, but there's a lot of people in there that have different ways to look at things and how they help the world. So that's all very interesting, and I'm sure you'll get a lot out of it, whoever you're interested in or how you see the world. Maybe it'd be interesting to read and see how other people see the world and how they help each other out there, making sure everything runs smooth.
Excellent. And I know that you've been involved in the business improvement, continuous improvement, lean. I'm not sure of the right label to put on it at the organizations that you were involved. How do you, what's the language that you use to refer to that improvement discipline that you worked in?
Business improvement or continuous improvement. Everybody is here to make something better. If you create it from scratch, you're amazing, I'm telling you. Honestly, but if you're here simply to improve what's already there, that's great too. Not everybody can build something from scratch, so continuous improvement improves on what we have, how to make it smoother, how to make it better. I just think that's the best way to make it all happen. If we don't have that continuous improvement, then why are we here, really?
Have in your experience with maybe different industries or different companies, how have you seen that particular discipline evolve?
Well, depends on which industry you're in. In mining, obviously, it's where you've improved the safety of something, you improve how you're underground. So you make sure your ventilation is better, you make sure your filtering is better, you make sure the diesel particulates in the air is less. You look at ways to take diesel out of the equation, therefore you do electrical gear underground, but then you've got to fuel the charge, the electrical gear, and how that happens and the improvements in there, the way you interact with all the equipment to gather the data to make the improvements happen and how to analyze that data. All that's continuous improvement aspects in a mining field. For a government field, because I was a councillor as well, you look at, again, the data. If you don't collect the data, if you don't measure it, you can't do anything. So you have to measure the data, collect the data, look at it, analyze and come up with a better way to look at things and do something with it. Every time data's coming in, but you can only use what you have at the time. And if you don't look at that data or if you don't collect that data, how are you going to improve things?
I'm sure being involved in the mining, safety is always a top concern. With the time that you spend in that industry, I'm curious if you've seen, I'm sure things have changed a lot. Are there some notable changes along the way, maybe in safety, or I don't know if there's some other things that have changed a lot?
Used to be that it was only people that have been around for a long time went underground. It wasn't any greenhorns, any green people going underground. Anybody that's new, you had to be in the industry for a long time, and you went through your paces. You weren't moved up quickly by any means. Things have changed a lot because we've got a lot more mining and a lot more people want to be in mining, and also we need more people. So there's greener, younger people out there a lot in mining. So we have to improve how people are taught and how people understand the industry and the hazards out there. Now, that's not easy to sink into people's heads sometimes. Very just recently, we lost 3 people in a mine in Cobar itself with a blast incident. Now, that's still under investigation, so nobody knows exactly what happened. But the gentleman that was the shift boss or the supervisor had gone there to see what went wrong, and he was the one of the people that died. He had been in the industry for more than 30 years. So if you look at the fact that that can still happen to somebody who has that much knowledge, making sure we find ways and make lessons learnt sink into the industry so we don't have people that don't come home. It's very, very tough when that happens to the mine, to the family, well, obviously the families, but the mine, to the community and the industry as a whole. It is devastating.
Yeah, it's definitely an industry that focusing on safety obviously is very important. What are some examples of how those lessons learned in, you know, whether it's extreme cases or just like, you know, basic cases, what are some best practices from the mining industry about how those lessons are shared?
They're shared with industry forums. They're shared across we have meetings every couple of months with all the minings in the region. The regulator does a big meeting annually that go through all those things. There's notifications go out to every mine, and so every mine gets them every week, and they go through those weekly to make sure the blokes on the floor, the blokes, the ladies on the floor, understand what's going on in a different mine and what to look for. So we have to tweak things just in case there's a new hazard we hadn't even thought about. Oh, we better look at that. So it's keeps everybody's mind awake every morning before anybody goes underground, or even in an open pit situation or in a mill situation. They have a morning meeting, and it turns people's heads on to, like, I'm at work, I've got to look at these things, I'm going to go home, so therefore make sure I'm taking care of all these things, see all these things. It's turning your eyes on and making sure your mate's okay too. So it's not anything more than in construction. The same thing happens. You make sure you turn your head on. You're on a construction site machinery. There's things overhead. There's things underneath you. You make sure where you're going and what you're doing, and make sure your bloke beside you knows what's going on, especially if it's a new person. So there's always industry pushes it out.
And you mentioned like a morning meeting, a daily production meeting. I don't know if there was like a specific term that you guys used for that sort of meeting. What did you call that meeting each day?
A toolbox meeting for the tradies, or a morning muster?
The morning muster, like, yeah, that's great. And it sounds like making sure, in your case, safety is an important part of that, is something that the leadership would reinforce.
Yeah. It's the first thing. You have to be safe. I mean, especially, no matter what, even if you're a mechanic, you're an electrician, you're an operator, you're anybody, you've got to look at the bigger picture, not just tunnel vision anything down. You've got to look at the bigger picture. When the geologists go on down underground and they want to have a look at a face so they know what ore's coming up, or whether it's the showing the ore or not showing the ore, they have to walk in front of the drills. Therefore, the drill has to stop and light up the area so the geologist can go forward and go and map it on a piece of paper and saying, what's this, all these pieces of different colour ore mean? They have to make sure that the bloke that's drilling knows that they're standing right there. They have to have a positive communication with each other. They have to understand. They have to stop and pull back from the face and wait. The bloke that's drilling has to indicate if there's any hazards in front of him before they walk forward. There's everybody has to take care of everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure that you mentioned your experience across different industries. Is there an example or a time that you can remember taking a practice from one industry that wasn't commonplace in another industry and saying, hey, you know, they do this over here. Maybe we should look at that.
Well, any industry all have morning meetings, but using lean across industries, like I've used it in mining and then in Antarctica, as well as construction, as well as I've worked in the Torres Strait, which is the top of Australia down to Antarctica, so the top to the bottom. So all those things are poured in, and I've used them everywhere. Whether it's also, I don't like fluff, adding words that don't need to be put into it. So I'm not real good on writing theses and that. I've done it, but I hate it. So I tend to do dot points and be concise and consistent, and that across any industry. I've taken across every industry. I can tell you exactly, even academia will listen. They don't like the way I do it. They hate the fact I just do dot points, and I'll elaborate on the dot points, but they hate it. They want it in a sentence or fluff. And I'm not that person. That's the only one I have a bit of strife with, I must admit.
It's interesting. Let's talk about you talk about the data and the metrics a bit. You know, safety is definitely one of those where I find this particularly with people who are new in a job sometimes. Like, they feel the pressure to hit the production numbers. And when you've been around a long time and you have experience, you're comfortable speaking up. But when you're brand new in a job and you're not sure if you're good enough and if they're going to keep you, and you know, maybe you overlook some things because you don't really know, you know, how important it is. How do you get all of the workers to that level of comfort to speak up about things?
Well, take an apprentice. The first year of an apprenticeship, you're just learning to be in the workforce, and then you move through your trade. But even an apprentice has a tradie. They're one-on-one for the first year of their apprenticeship. If you've got a green person coming on site who's never been in a mine before, or never been in construction before, or never been in that industry before, you have a buddy with them for a period of time so they understand the systems, understand what to look for, especially in certain areas, like certain hazardous industries, whether it's oil, whether it's gas, whatever, you always have somebody with you for a period of time to understand what they're looking at, not just verbalize what you're looking at, understand physically, that's what I mean here, right here. So what would you do in this situation sort of thing? You have to make sure you teach people from the not just the verbal, but the physical. So it's all right having all this knowledge, but it's knowledge is only knowledge until you use it. So you've got to use it to become the skill to be able to do the job, whatever job it happens to be. Even the boss man has to learn from somebody to start with, especially if you have high intelligently people come in, and we've got everybody's intelligence at a level. Of course it is, but you can always increase it. We have highly intelligent people in all industries. And to move them from one industry to another just brings those intelligence and filters it down through everybody else. So why don't we continue to do that? We have to learn those things, and that's got to come from somewhere.
You mentioned the daily meetings, like a production meeting, stand-up. Are there some other meetings that you recommend, or rituals on a particular frequency to do, like the learning, some of the other important feedback cycles for a team to continue to get better?
Well, any team usually has a weekly, they've got their daily, then they've got their weekly, and that shows what's coming up and what's been. They also have a monthly, and then they got a 3-monthly. Then we go into all those. That's mainly for planning aspects. You have to make sure you plan correctly, and this is where all these come into. And every department comes in together to talk about that plan to make sure they have all the resources they need to achieve the plan. If we're looking just on lean, we have to obviously make sure the meetings are precise and to the point, and there's no fluff. We pull all the information that we need. We make sure we have the data that we need when we bring it into a meeting. We make sure that the information is easily digestible for everyone in the meeting, so no jargon. It's just a smoother run. So we've got to make sure clarity is on the table so nobody else gets confused. So if it's clarified and it's easy to understand, then everybody's on the same page.
If there was, I'm sure as teams move around and you have to move faster, there's probably a few times where somebody got put in as a leader that maybe didn't have as much experience as you would have liked them to have. Are there some lessons that you might share for somebody who's new in a leadership role?
Yes, if you're the most intelligent person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Make sure you use intelligence of everybody else there. Make sure that there's subject matter experts amongst your team in every area. So that information, bring it together, ask for their input, no matter whose eyes they are. They can be the apprentice's first time he's been on site, but he says something nobody else has because everybody's walked past it because it's been there forever. Make sure you get everybody's input. And once you've got everybody's input, you make the decision, then everybody feels they're part of that decision and you all move forward in the same direction.
Janine, I'm going to just throw some rapid fire questions at you, kind of short question, short answer sort of thing here. So the most important job of a leader is to blank.
Make sure people understand what's going on. So clarify. Clarify and it doesn't matter who you are. It's only a title. Titles aren't people. Make sure everybody feels the same. They feel like they've been putting into the decisions being made, but clarify. If you don't clarify, nobody knows what the goal is.
That's a good one. Do you have a favorite go-to tool from, let's say, the lean toolbox or, you know, problem-solving tool, visual device, one that you find more useful?
Five whys. Yeah. I ask a lot of whys. You give me an answer and I say, why? So it's automatic, I get all the whys.
Yeah. Okay. Other than your own book, because I'm sure you would recommend that one, is there a book that you recommend that people should be familiar with?
There's quite a few. At the moment, I'm reading a good one. It's called Hello, Darling. It's about a lady that's over in Western Australia. And she's a very interesting lady. And she runs a podcast and a TV channel. So she's a rather lovely lady. I met her when I went over to WA to do the book launch. Other than that, I've got numerous, but they're mainly textbooks on engineering and on PMP and all those books. I tend to read quite a lot. Other books that are coming out that I find interesting at the moment is Here Is Raw series. In fact, I'm going to be in one of those. So there's always something interesting out there. It doesn't matter from what industry or whatever gender or whatever age you are, there's always something interesting out there to grab hold of. And of course, there's always novels. And I read a lot of those too.
It sounds like you love to learn. Curiosity is a common trait. That sounds like you've been bit by that bug for sure. Okay. I'll ask you for another one besides the five whys, but do you have a favorite question you like to use in problem solving or continuous improvement?
I ask why a lot. Mainly, what's the best way to do this? Is there a better way somewhere else? As you said before, cross industries, is there another way we can do this that we'll achieve the outcome with less input from resources or personnel? And can we keep the people out of it to make it safer?
Is there something that you believe that others around you, maybe the industry, tends to disbelieve or maybe think differently about?
Yeah. I reckon people can adapt to anything. We're human. We adapt to everything. And resilience is very important. And people don't like that word for some reason. But if you don't have resilience, you can't bounce back. And if you can't bounce back, you can't get stronger. So no matter what you get knocked down with, you always get back up. So resilience is very, very important.
I love that one. That's such that resonates with me as a shared core value that I care about a lot as well. That's a great one. So broadly right now, everybody's talking about, worried about, like, artificial intelligence. Is, you know, I'm curious if you have any predictions about the future of the discipline of continuous improvement in regards to the AI phenomenon.
As long as we use it right, and I don't doubt we will, we can, because if you can ask a question and get all the data in one place, and then you can analyze it and come up with a solution, why wouldn't you use it? Really, gather all the data. That's what it's all about. Use it to the nth degree. And if we get people out of the hazardous areas and let AI and a robot do it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? We can put people to work in other fields.
Yeah, it sounds like there's still plenty of dangerous jobs in the mining industry that we'd be happy to give up in some way.
Well, definitely.
That's great. Well, Janine, is there any questions that I should have asked you today that I asked you prepare for, but I didn't ask you yet?
No, I think that continuous improvement, lean, I find it fascinating. And now, as I mentioned before, Keith, I've worked with your program when I was at a mine a couple of years ago, and I found it absolutely fascinating the way it just brought everything together. Now, I'm not blowing smokes, but it's pretty good. The way it's all brought together is pretty great. And the fact that you can physically see it and you can do a dashboard, and people who have no concept of what you're saying in a jargon sense have clarity of what's going on. And that to me means everything. You know, I like clarity. So that's where I find your particular product is very interesting. I've pushed it on a few people so they can use it. They've used it and found it interesting.
This episode is brought to you by KPI Fire, the all-in-one platform for continuous improvement. With KPI Fire, you can align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people. So whether you're leading a team or driving enterprise-wide change, KPI Fire helps you deliver real results. Learn more at www.kpifire.com.
Well, Janine, I'm super happy to have you here on the podcast today. And I know the scheduling was a little bit difficult with, the big time difference that we have. So thanks so much for joining us here. If folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn, just Janine Lee Barrett on LinkedIn. Just send me a message and I'll get in contact with everyone.
Wonderful. For our listeners, if you'd like to suggest a guest or ask a question, share any ideas for episodes, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn as well, Keith Norris. And this concludes this episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If you've enjoyed the episode, please be sure to add a comment. You can like, follow, subscribe on all the socials, and share the podcast with your friends or colleagues who are as passionate about continuous improvement as you are. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.